Welcome to Peyto's second quarter 2015 results conference call. This is clearly a busy week for reporting, so thanks to everybody that's joining in on the call with us this morning. Before we get started, I do want to send a big shout out to the Peyto team for another great quarter of results. This has been a very active second quarter for us. No break for everybody over the spring breakup period, and the team's been extremely successful driving down costs and maintaining profitability on our capital investments this quarter, even during these low commodity prices. So obviously that's very important, since profitability that we're generating today is on shareholders' capital that we're investing. In the room with me today is almost all the Peyto management team. We've got Scott Robinson, our Chief Operating Officer, Kathy Turgeon, our CFO, Dave Thomas, our VP Exploration, Tim Louie, VP of Land, Lee Curran, VP of Drilling and Completions, and Todd Burdick, VP of Production. JP Lachance, our VP Engineering, is missing in action with vacation, but that's to be expected this time of year. And of course, we've got Jim Grant, our Investor Awareness Rep. And Jim, I see you've collected some questions from shareholders, so why don't I turn it over to you?
Okay, thank you very much. For those of you who are new to our conference calls, we hold the first half as a question and answer session where I ask some of the senior management questions about Peyto and its latest financials before we turn the call over to questions from investors and representatives of investment businesses. Darren, our second quarter news results news release shows an unprecedented level of drilling for a second quarter, yet a very reasonable rate of capital spending. Just how much more effective is our capital spending now than in previous years?
Jim, that's a good question. You know, and I think there's a few ways that we can probably measure the effectiveness of our capital investments compared to past years. You know, when we compare it against just what things used to cost, for instance, over last year and several years in the past, it looks like things like drilling and completions are down substantially. Those are costing us about 30% less. We can also compare our initial production rates and the cost of what we're building today from a production basis. That looks like it's running around 12,000 per flowing BOE. That again is extremely low, compares to around 18,000 a flowing BOE for the past few years. So we're down over 30% when it comes to that sort of cost comparison. And of course, that's a full cycle capital analysis. Or we can compare the profits we're generating on that capital investment. And I think that's probably the most important way to compare it. Measure how effective our capital spending is on that profitability metric. And using, if we were to use comparable commodity prices, the same as, say, we used last year in the analysis, we're generating quite a bit better returns. Full cycle internal rates of return on the first half of the year, I think, are probably close to about 50%. Using the same commodity deck that we used last year that got us somewhere in the mid-20s. Again, those are full cycle costs, so they include facilities, land, seismic, everything. But of course, commodity prices aren't the same as they were last year. We had quite a bit more robust commodity prices last year than we do this year. So, you know, that 50% is probably closer into the mid-30s, but still very good rates of return. And, you know, all in all, I'd say our capital investments today are at least as effective as previous years, if not more so, even though we're in a tougher commodity price environment.
Okay. Turning to Todd Burdick, our VP of Production. Todd, the TransCanada pipeline problems that impacted our ability to produce at our full capacity into their pipelines have continued into the second and third quarter. Can you give us an update on what the impact has been to date and what the outlook is for the issues currently constraining TransCanada pipeline capacity finally resolved? Along with those issues, we noted that we are currently leaving 1,200 BOE a day of propane in our gas stream due to low prices. What constrains the amount of propane we reject into the gas stream?
Sure, Jim. So the effect of the curtailments mean that we have no interruptible service available to us, and we can only flow our contracted gas. And when you add liquids, that equates to about 80,000 BOE per day. Given that our producing strategy is to flow our new wells, which to this point have added over 30,000 BOE per day, it means we are only flowing 50,000 BOE a day from our base wells. However, they have productive capability of over 60,000 BOE per day. We have seen some relief here in August, and what we are hearing from TCPL is that the constraints placed upon their NGTL system should continue to be alleviated in September and into the fourth quarter. As that happens, we expect that there will be more capacity in the system and hence more interruptible service available. Jim, with regard to propane rejection, our wells produce about 450 to 500 million cubic feet a day. About 2% of that is propane, or about 10 million cubic feet a day, or 6,500 barrels of liquid. Now, when we operate our reefridge plants at their highest recoveries possible, we are able to recover in aggregate from all the plants 25% of the propane and convert it to liquid. Since we began rejecting propane, we brought that recovery factor down to its current level of 8%. And I should mention that the deep-cutted Old Man is able to recover about 80% of the propane, but only on 80 million of that 500 million cubic feet a day. And currently, that recovery has been lowered to just over 20%. And due to constraints of the design of our process equipment, we aren't able to reject any more propane without rejecting butane, which is still more profitable to sell as a liquid.
Okay, turning to Dave Thomas, our VP of Exploration. Dave, can you give us an update on our exploration activities and give some color and dimension to what our news release describes as significantly higher per well production averages this year over previous years?
Thanks, Jim. As mentioned in the press release, our average per well production is exceeding last year's and in fact exceeds all of the previous past 4 years. So far, the average production for new spuds in 2015 is beating the older average well curves by about 1 million cubic feet per day. The main driver underlying this change has been a combination of the superior performance of the 2015 Wilrich wells, coupled with a change in the 2015 drilling portfolio mix, where we've dropped Cardium locations in favor of adding more Notikewin wells. In the previous 4 years, we've averaged about 7 Cardium spuds in the first half of the year. This year, out of 65 spuds in Q1 and Q2 together, we spud 0 Cardiums. The Wilrich drilling has been good. Our Q1 and Q2 Wilrich wells have exceeded expectations, both in the Greater Sundance area and especially at Brazeau. An internal review done earlier in the year showed that out of 194 horizontal Wilrich wells that Peyto had drilled to that point, 4 of the top 7 performers were at Brazeau. So for the balance of the year, 2 of our 10 rigs are busy drilling to follow up on the success. In Q3 and Q4, coming up at Brazeau, we plan to drill 11 Wilrich, 2 Middle Falher, and 2 to 3 Notikewins. Gas production at the Brazeau plant is currently running at about 45 million cubic feet per day, and we shortly should have it maxed out at the current plant capacity of 50 million a day. More compression in Q4 will increase capacity to 60 million a day, and we're planning to further increase that to 100 million a day by April of 2016. At South Ansell, we're busy drilling the Middle Falher and Upper Falher. The performance of our Middle Falher at Ansell has actually been superior to our Ansell Wilrich wells. Our 2 rigs active at Ansell are scheduled to drill 8 Middle Falher, 3 Upper Falher, 1 Notikewin, and 2 Wilrich wells in Q3 and Q4. Gas from Ansell will flow north to supply the expansion at our plant at Swanson. And a 3rd rig closer to Swanson is scheduled to drill 6 Wilrich, 1 Middle Falher, and 1 Blue Sky well in Q3 and Q4. A new exploration area we've started to drill is at Minehead, where we've built a significant land position. We recently spud our first Wilrich and 1 Blue Sky well, plus we plan to drill a 2nd Wilrich well there by the end of 2015. The remainder of Peyto's drilling for the balance of the year will be accomplished in our Greater Sundance area, where we continue to achieve good results from our Notikewin, Falher, and Wilrich targets in the Spirit River. There are no Cardium wells scheduled in 2015 at either Sundance or our northern lands near Kakwa.
Okay, Todd, our field operating costs continue to move lower. One might have thought that production curtailments from TransCanada constraints would have put an upward pressure on our costs. Is that true? And what other factors have allowed us to actually reduce the overall field operating costs?
Jim. The curtailments meant our production for the quarter was lower than our capability. Had we been able to produce to our full capability, which does include operational downtime, we would have effectively seen our field operating costs come down 2 cents per MCF equivalent lower. We've continued to see a drop in chemical and maintenance costs, both field and plants, and we've also seen a reduction in trucking costs. For the remainder of the year, we see our field costs holding in that 29 to 30 cent per MCF equivalent range.
Okay. Turning to Scott Robinson, our Chief Operating Officer and our VP of Operations. Scott, with a significant drop in the Q2 in the price of gas and much larger drops in the price of liquids as compared to the same quarter in 2014 and to a lesser degree compared to Q1 of 2015, how is our operating margin holding up?
The simple answer, Jim, is the margin's holding very well, very steady in that 78-79% range for this past quarter, as well as a year ago, the second quarter of 2014, and we look back at this immediate first quarter of 2015, the same thing. So we have moved our cost structure, as Todd indicated, downwards, commensurate with the decline in commodity prices, obviously, to hold this margin at that level. For the past quarter, we realized a 381 per MCF equivalent price, which is down about 28% year over year for the same quarter, and it's down just under 10% from the first quarter this year. So yeah, our prices are down, but as Todd has identified, we have followed suit with reductions in our cost structure, which have really helped out and preserve this margin. Where are commodity prices right now? The liquid prices are still languishing, as we're all aware. However, we've seen some upward movements, some very encouraging movement in AECO gas prices, as there's been a strong demand for gas this summer. This past second quarter, the average gas price at AECO was about $2.50, and we're looking at just under $3 right now. So when we consider that 92% of our production is natural gas weighted, this natural gas price increase that we're seeing here over the last month or so is very meaningful. And so long as we're able to hold our cost structure where it is, or as Todd has indicated, possibly lessen it even more, we may make some gains on this operating margin and possibly even increase it from that 78 to 79% level to a higher percentage of revenue.
Okay. Turning to Lee Curran, our Vice President of Drilling and Completions. Lee, can you give us an update on how drilling and completion costs have evolved compared to the outlook you gave us after the first quarter results came out this year?
Sure, Jim. Simply put, our capital cost structure has evolved in line with those expectations that we communicated following our first quarter release, which was continued theme of cost reduction, both drilling and completion operations. The combined effect of service pricing reductions, performance gains, as well as our implementation of technical revisions continues to result in significantly lower costs throughout both drilling and completion operations. A comparison of costs for those wells drilled and completed to the end of the first quarter illustrated an 8% drill cost reduction and a 15% completion cost reduction. As discussed in our first quarter release, full realization of service cost reductions really began to take shape towards the end of the first quarter. Now, in addition to service cost reductions, we had commenced implementation of a number of technical revisions, the most significant being frac proppant selection. As well, we were realizing significant performance gains resulting in reduced drilling days. Our second quarter release describes an average drilling complete well cost reduction from $4.4 million in 2014 to $3.1 million, or a 29% reduction in the second quarter of this year. Now, this accounts for all of our spring breakup activities that were exclusively focused in the core Sundance area, and there we realize our lowest of low cost structures due to developed infrastructure, logistical efficiencies, and drilling performance. A comparison of 2014 drilling and completion cost structure over this most recent quarter on a type well basis, and by this I'm describing a comparison of like wells within the same formations and same operating areas, we are currently realizing reductions of approximately 20% on drilling and 30% on completion costs. The cumulative effect equates to an overall year-to-date reduction of $27.5 million on our drilling program and about $24 million on our completion program, as compared to what we would have expected to have realized in the same program with a 2014 cost structure environment. It's important to note that these reductions are not solely based on service cost reductions, which have the future potential to escalate in a more active market than what we are experiencing today. Preliminary calculations indicate approximately 15 to 18% of these gains are a direct result of reduced service pricing. The remainder of the cost reductions, another 10%, is a result of the elements that we control directly through improvements in performance and technical design considerations. Much of the industry experienced a late start following breakup this year. However, activity levels appear to have stabilized throughout the summer months, with rig utilization currently hovering around 30%. Given this stabilization of the market, we do not anticipate at this point significant further cost reductions from our service providers below what they're currently providing. However, we continue to optimize well design and operational execution in the pursuit of lower cost structure.
Okay. Scott, despite the temporary constraints on our production, how are our production facilities evolving to handle the eventual return to full production from all the new wells we are bringing on? Are we tying all these wells in now? And what will the impact on our total production and decline rates be when we no longer have constraints on our production?
That's too many questions, Jim. Three questions. I'll start with the second one. Our strategy in light of the transportation limitations that we've talked so much about was to bring on essentially all of our new 2015 drills while either shutting in or severely constraining the older established wells that were drilled in the past and that are part of our pre-2015 base. So in direct answer, yes, we are bringing on the new wells and we're not saving them for the future. This choice, for interest's sake, is because we estimate of the wells that we have to curtail in order to meet the transportation limitations, the older wells will benefit the most from the shut-in period, a pressure of buildup, and we'll take advantage of that when they are returned to production through some flush production under normal operations. This choice also to preferentially produce the new wells is very meaningful to the point where we can fully assess those wells and ensure that our ongoing capital program is yielding the results that we expect and desire. Your last question there, before I turn to the first one, was about total production. As Todd had indicated, thus far our new wells have an aggregate given us a growth wedge of about 30,000 barrels a day. And when we look towards the balance of the drilling over this year and make a provision for the decline that's occurring in those new wells, we expect to have a wedge on the order of 45 to 50,000 barrels a day out of our growth program. And assuming that the transportation constraints do relax as we project, then when we add that wedge to the return of the base wells, we should be knocking on the door of about 100,000 barrels a day at the end of the year. Now, what will our facilities be able to do? And that was your first question. We should be able to do this production level quite handily. We've added compression at Old Man North and Brazeau, and we're currently in the midst of our Swanson plant expansion, which will start up this fall. And collectively, all of that will add about 12 or 13,000 barrels a day of capability to the capability we brought into the year. So that'll put us at or above the 100,000 barrel level. As I mentioned, this year-end production pop is highly dependent on the TransCanada capability. And we've indicated that we believe that it will pop up at the end of October or November. A couple of key things that are going on in their world, they're executing a project that will allow them to offload some gas on their North Central Corridor line that is currently coming down through the Edson Main Line. And secondly, they're fulfilling the requirements of the NEB on an integrity inspection of a lot of elements of their line. And collectively, we would expect that those two things should create about a BCF a day of capacity on this system, which is running about 7.8 to 8 BCF a day. So that, if those things do come true, we will see some IT likely return to the front there and be able to take advantage of that.
Okay. Turning to our VP of Land, Tim Louie, how is the deal-making landscape looking in the patch these days? What sort of level of farm-in swaps and tuck-in acquisitions are happening compared to last year?
Thanks, Jim. The Peyto Land Department has had a productive year with the farm-ins, swaps, and tuck-in acquisitions we've been able to close to date. These deals have added 73 well locations to our drilling inventory. We've also added 14 locations on lands picked up at land sales. In prior years, the majority of the new drill additions associated with land acquisitions would have been sourced from land sales. This year, the reverse is true. Over 80% of our new drill additions have come from negotiated land deals. In the current environment of low commodity prices, decreased capital budgets, and shrinking cash flow, we are seeing that companies are generally more receptive to dealing their acreage. So we'll continue with our efforts to close more land deals through the remainder of the year, but we'll do so in conjunction with land sale acquisitions.
Okay. Turning to our CFO and VP of Finance, Kathy Turgeon. Kathy, we noted one-time charge this quarter due to the change in Alberta corporate tax. Can you explain how the tax change triggered a one-time accounting charge?
Sure, Jim. So deferred tax is an accrual for the income tax liability associated with using income tax pools and other tax assets in the current period to shelter current earnings from cash taxation. By using the pools today, the company will not be able to shelter as much taxable income from the company's current reserves in future periods. That income will be taxed at the rates that are in effect in the future, and the best proxy for that rate is the current rate. Therefore, whenever there's a rate change, the entire accumulated balance of deferred tax must be revalued to reflect that change. When rates go up, there's a one-time expense, and if rates go down, there would be a one-time expense recovery. Deferred taxes are non-cash and are an accrual of liability for accounting purposes under GAAP. They are not actual income taxes owing to the government.
Okay, thanks. Dave, are changing conditions in the mix of commodity prices or are improving efficiencies in drilling and completing changing our drilling program priorities?
Yes, Jim. Changes in commodity pricing and improved efficiencies have had an effect on our drilling program. The most obvious result is the lack of Cardium drilling we've planned for 2015. The Cardium targets we typically drill have lower gas deliverability but generate high liquid yields. With low liquid pricing in 2015, we've deferred the Cardium drilling until we see improvement. To replace the Cardiums, we've been drilling additional Spirit River wells, specifically Notikewins, which have higher deliverability under current conditions have significantly better project economics. On the flip side of the coin, improved drilling and completion efficiencies have allowed us to target some shalier middle and upper Falher targets in Sundance and to begin drilling the middle Falher at Brazeau. There's considerable drilling opportunity in these shaly sands, and a good economic outcome is a lot easier for Peyto to achieve than for most of our competitors.
Thank you. Darren, in the news release, we talked about an annualized return on capital employed, and I had a question from someone about how that compares with the internal rates of return we have in the corporate presentation.
It's a great question, Jim. I get it a lot, and you know, it's I think something that confuses a lot of investors. They see, you know, not only in our presentation but in lots of company presentations, these higher field level IRRs for individual wells, and then they look at return on capital employed, and you know, ours is lower, no question. And in a lot of companies, it doesn't exist at all. And so, what's the bust, and how does that occur? And you know, I think for us, historically, our return on capital employed has been about half of what we calculate as our internal rates of return out in the field. Now remember, those are field level returns, and as much as we do a full cycle analysis to include land and seismic and facilities and all the capital costs that we're expending, it doesn't include corporate costs, it doesn't include G&A, it doesn't include interest, it doesn't include taxes, it doesn't include bonuses, and doesn't include those things that we take off of the field level returns to get to what the shareholder sees at the end of the day. So you have to account for that. You have to account for things like cost of capital even in there. And a lot of times, in a lot of companies, obviously, there's a significant amount of cost incurred there that wipe out basically all of the returns that companies are generating in the field. Now for us, as I mentioned, typically, just historically, has reduced our field level returns by about half, but I mean, that's part of the reason that we set the bar so high for our economics in the field, is because we have to be able to deliver a decent level of return to shareholders by the time it eventually gets to them. You know, in some ways you could say we could work backwards, and we could say what's an appropriate level of return that shareholders have to see to want to invest in Peyto. And if we double that, then we get to a field level return at a minimum, and that's a risk return after we've accounted for the things that worked and the things that didn't. And then if you want to go even further and say, well, what's the pre-risked return that we have to do, you know, theoretically going into a drilling operation, it's even higher still. So, you know, it's part of the reason that we do set the bar so high on the projects that we are pursuing. It's part of the reason that we focus so intensely on execution, making sure that we have a very low failure rate, because that wipes out a lot of return. But at the end of the day, you know, I think historically our return on capital employed has been in the very high teens, and that I think is industry leading as far as the oil and gas industry goes.
Right. And Darren, as we ramp up into full summer drilling levels with 10 rigs and much greater efficiencies of the rigs, what do you see as the outlook for Peyto for the rest of the year?
Well, you know, I'm quite optimistic, actually. I think we're going to have a better half in the back half of the year than we even had in the first half of the year. And the first half of the year has been pretty exciting with the cost reductions we've seen, with the performance of the wells that we've seen better than historical averages. You know, I think there's finally light at the end of the pipe, as one person put it, on the TCPL issues. Looks like they're finally going to work through some of the D-rate issues and some of the expansion issues that are causing the restrictions today. Gas prices are strengthening. You know, they're stronger than they were a quarter ago, even though oil prices are weaker. But, you know, the weak oil prices really are what's driving the activity levels that's giving us the good costs. So we'll take the weak liquid prices for the stronger gas prices and less competition in the industry. So, you know, I think things are shaping up real well for us. We're drilling great wells. They're super cheap, and I think we're generating a lot of return on capital for the shareholders that on the capital that we're investing for them. So, I mean, that's the whole point of our business, right, is to generate a profit for investors. So, you know, I'm particularly excited about the back half of this year.
Great. Wayne, I'd like to turn the call over now to questions from investors and representatives of investment businesses.
Our first question is from Travis Wood from TD Securities. Please go ahead.
Yeah, good morning, guys. I might have missed the first part of the dialogue, but you had been talking about letting some wells pressure up and bringing those back online. Which region or which, if there's a specific zone that those wells are producing from currently, can you give some color on that?
Yeah, Todd had mentioned we've got about 10,000 barrels a day or a little bit above that 11,000 reduced capacity, and the wells involved there are the full spread of older aged wells. So there's Wilriches and older Cardium wells, and you know there's no real selection of a particular zone, and most of that is in the Greater Sundance area where we've restricted those wells.
Okay, and then is there any? You mentioned that likely to come on at a bit better rate from the pressure buildup, but is there any, how do you think of the liquids component for the wells that have liquids attached to it? Does that change at all once they come back online?
I wouldn't expect, it should resume right where they were prior to them being either shut in or curtailed. But we will note that those wells that comprise that 10,000-11,000 barrels of reduced capacity do carry a higher liquid to gas ratio than the wells currently have on. So we should see a bit of a bump on our liquid to gas ratio from the return of those wells.
I think our older wedges of production typically included more Cardium than say the newer wedges of production. So just in general, that's going to be a higher liquid yield, but the propane price is going to affect how we operate our facilities, though, that those old gas, old wells come into. Clearly, if propane is still in the negative, then we're still going to be boiling off there and rejecting the propane as much as we can, putting it back in the gas stream, even for those more liquid-rich wells.
The Cardiums, as you mentioned, they'll carry some free condensate that will be worth quite a bit. You know, that'll help pop the condensate number up a bit.
And is this volume, or these volumes, is this the reason that corporately you call liquid yields 20 barrels per million to 14 to 15 today? Is that the main driver behind that contraction?
No, the main driver is the rejection of propane. Because it's worth, if you look at a theoretical barrel of propane that we could recover is worthless to us right now, unfortunately, because of, it's basically worth a couple dollars in Edmonton, but we've got to spend money to get it there, and we've got to fractionate it. If we leave it in the gas stream, it's worth about 12 bucks, 10 to 12 bucks per liquid barrel equivalent. So we're just pushing a lot of propane out into the gas stream, as Todd had alluded. That's the primary driver for the reduction. Another component is the leaning of our stream with the new wells that we're drilling. They're on the lower side of our average liquid yield.
There's about 2.5 to 3 barrels a million, Travis, that's associated with that propane rejection. So where we would have been, say, 19.5 to 20 barrels a million this time last year, we're now 15 barrels a million now, so we're, you know, three of those barrels of the five that are off are propane rejection. You know, one might be associated with a cardium, more cardium percentage being shut in, and then one might be just the natural leaning up of our total stream because we're doing more and more Spirit Rivers, which are typically a little leanier than the cardiums.
Okay, great. Thanks very much, Liddell.
Yeah, you bet. Thanks for the question.
Thank you. The following question is from Daryl Bishop from Haywood Securities. Please go ahead.
Hi, good morning, guys. Thanks for taking my question here. Just trying to get a feel for your corporate decline post the TCPL issues and given how you guys have responded by mainly choking back the base production wells here. You know, in theory, that should be positive for declines when you're looking into 2016, given the repressurization that you guys mentioned, and, you know, just given the magnitude of your base production right now. You know, where do you guys see corporate declines going? And then the spin on that is, where do you see maintenance capital into 2016, assuming that, you know, you knock on that 100,000 barrel a day kind of target?
Thanks, Daryl. It's a great question. You know, when we go back to, say, 2013, for instance, where we had kind of the same kind of thing, where, remember, TransCanada Pipelines was trying to encourage guys to sign up for long-haul pipe, and so they had increased the IT tariff big time, and we saw AECO prices collapse in the summer of 2013. At that time, what we were doing, we were actually not bringing on new wells. We were holding them back. And so when we brought a whole bunch of it on in the fourth quarter and at the end of the year, we got a big surge in production. And we also saw the base decline going into the next year spike up a little bit. It was a little bit higher than it would have otherwise been because we brought on all this flush production right in the fourth quarter. So here again, we're looking at a bunch of production increase in the fourth quarter. But the difference this time is it's not going to be new production that we're bringing all on in a big block. It's going to be older, more stabilized production that we're bringing on. So it shouldn't have, I don't think, the same dramatic effect spiking our decline, our base decline up. I would expect actually going into next year that our base decline looks very similar to what we thought it should look like had we been producing constantly up and our production volumes having ramped up without the restriction. So, you know, we had, I think, predicted that year over year, 2016 should have a slightly lower decline than 2015. I think if we hit that 100,000 barrel a day mark, that's probably still going to be the case. This year we're offsetting about a 34% base decline. We had thought maybe next year it might drop by 1%. I think that's probably still the assumption at this point. Obviously we true that up in detail at the end of the year though, when we do up our forecasts for 2016 and our budget for 2016, and we look at the performance of all the wells. You know, fourth quarter is going to be important to true that up. We're going to have to see all that old gas come back on, see it performing as it is supposed to perform based on how it had been declining. So pressure is going to be on Todd, obviously, to get all those old wells up and back to their original capability. But, you know, as Scott mentioned, we should have capacity in the existing facilities and then with the expansion work that we're doing to handle all that volume. So the second part of your question was more, you know, what's it going to take to obviously maintain that level of production? And then, you know, arguably, if we have an aggressive capital year, we're going to grow that. You know, if commodity prices don't change, if we stay at the same sort of level where we've got weak liquid pricing, gas prices that are sort of just under $3 or around that $3 level, I would expect activity levels to stay very similar to where we are today. That being said, I would think that we should be able to maintain the capital efficiencies that we've achieved just most recently. So, which is really exciting. You know, if it's only going to cost us somewhere between 12 and 15,000 of flowing BOE, for instance, to add placement production throughout the year, then, you know, it won't take as much capital to hold ourselves flat at that 100,000 barrel a day mark as it used to. And we're just that much more efficient, and then capital can be put towards, you know, even increasing the production.
That's great. I appreciate the answer, caller.
You bet. Okay, well, thanks, Wayne, and thanks for the questions, guys. Thanks to everybody for listening in this morning. I understand this is a busy week, and so thanks for participating in our call. You know, as I mentioned, I think the back half of this year looks even better than the first half, so it's going to be exciting to come back to you guys in the fall and report not only our Q3 activity, but how we're looking, setting up, going into 2016. So until then, thanks for listening in.